Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This morning we're going to read one verse. That's the very last verse of chapter 29 of Canto 3. The title of the chapter is Explanation of Devotional Service. And I'm not going to do a review of the entire chapter. I'll just mention a few points. Kapila Dev likes speaking about devotional service. The previous chapter is chapter 28. Kapila Dev's instructions on devotional service. And this is explanation of devotional service. And it's not that that topic hasn't been discussed in previous chapters. So it's a wonderful section. This verse ends, the description of devotional service in the next chapter is kind of scary. It's Kapila Dev's descriptions of adverse fruitive activities. Chapter 30. We'll start with that tomorrow morning. Chapter 30. There's three sections in the Bhagavatam that are really scary. If you really want to get like really serious about devotional service, the fifth canto description of the hellish planets, chapter 30, adverse fruitive activities, really scary, and the 12th canto that describes the mature stage of Kali Yuga before Kalki comes, how degraded and shocking are the conditions on this planet when Kali Yuga comes to its close, the mature stage of Kali. So I'm mentioning this because verse 45, which is the last verse of chapter 29, is a very nice transition verse. The impetus in this transition verse is let go of affinity for matter. Let go of all that is temporary. Take shelter of the eternal. Of course, that's what devotional service is anyways. We may engage ourselves with the temporary. However, bhakti is where we don't seek our happiness through interacting with the temporary. We engage those things that are temporary in service to the source of those temporary things in the mood of devotion to the shelter is not the happiness in doing those things. The shelter is the opportunity to render some service to the Supreme. So please remember, this is Satya Yuga. In fact, it's the very, very, very beginning of not just a day of Brahma, but it's the life of Brahma. This is really early. And the means of achieving spiritual perfection during Satya Yuga is dhyayate, meditation. But it doesn't mean meditation instead of devotional service. It's meditation is a means to enter into pure devotional service. So the earlier chapters describe many things, but the process of meditation itself and the distinction between matter and spirit, we belong to the category of spirit. In that correct orientation of self, we belong to the category of spirit, then meditation upon the Supreme Spirit meditation upon what? Upon the Supreme Spirit. And in that position of meditation upon the Supreme Spirit, engage in devotional service. Meaning, the meditation itself is an expression of devotional service, and what do you do when you're not doing that devotional service, that meditation? You're cooking or walking or interacting with family or whatever it is that you do. Let your mind be absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You can say, like a substratum or a foundation to all that you do. Manmana, mind fixed upon the Supreme. For the purpose of bhakti, devotion to the Supreme. So at the beginning of this chapter 29, Devahuti says, you've instructed that I should engage in devotional service, which is made accessible through sadhu sangha. That's what you've encouraged me. Now my question is it possible that devotional service, which is pure, can be influenced by or mixed with the modes of nature? That's how the chapter begins. And the answer is yes. Devotional service is pure. But when one is influenced by the mode of ignorance and one takes up devotional service, it will look like this. Devotional service taken up by someone who's in the mode of passion will look like that. And devotional service in the mode of goodness, for devotional service taken up by someone who's influenced by the mode of goodness will look like this other thing. And then there is devotional service that there's no taint of the modes of nature, and this is what it looks like. And then he describes the symptoms of one in that consciousness and how to achieve that consciousness. It's very similar, the expanded version of chapter 14 of Bhagavad Gita. Familiar with chapter 14 of Bhagavad Gita, it's the modes of nature. And Krishna says, chapter 14, Bhagavad Gita, this is what the modes are. Everyone's influenced by the modes. Then he makes this kind of exclusive statement. Some aren't. Arjuna asks, what's the symptoms of those that aren't? And most importantly, how did they get there? Just an expanded version of chapter, that concluding part of chapter 14 is chapter 29. That's the comparison between undergraduate study and graduate study. 2 + 2 = 4, and 2 + 2 = 4 in graduate study. But how to apply 2 + 2 = 4 in graduate study, you can understand so much more about it. Similarly, the modes of nature are operating. We're influenced by the modes of nature, and we're engaged in devotional service. We're not at the stage of pure devotional service, but we're engaged in devotional service that's tainted by, or our consciousness is tainted by, those modes of nature, and therefore we don't take up devotional service in pure consciousness, but it's potent to bring us to pure consciousness. And how can one do that is in the verses just preceding this final section. And then the final section is a very fascinating description about time. Time influences everything of this world, and time is conspicuous by its absence in the spiritual world. That's a nice phrase Prabhupada used. Time is conspicuous by its absence just like it's very unusual to be speaking in the Naperville Center and Premananda's not here. She's conspicuous by her absence. I'm sure she'll hear a recording. But she's conspicuous by her absence. In a similar way, not identical, but similarly, in pure devotional service, even that pure devotional service that we render while we're in this place that's temporary, time is conspicuous by its absence. The operative force of bhakti is not pushed or pulled, created or destroyed by time. It's flowing directly from the soul, connected to the Supreme Soul, even while we're moving about the temporal realm. That's what he's describing. What's that like? See, he's describing it. And how the temporal realm is influenced by time is also described. I learned this from Burijan in his Art of Teaching book. It's about this big. Burijan wrote a book on the art of teaching because he's an educator. So he was fascinated by the topic of how do you effectively teach. And he spent about 12 years compiling this book, The Art of Teaching. It's very interesting. And I took his Art of Teaching course for 30 days for the Kartik month in Vrindavan. So one of the things I learned from that course is a teaching method out of many is called compare and contrast. To teach what something is, you say what it's like and how it's different from other things. Kind of like a Venn diagram. You know what that is? You've heard of that before? You've heard of a Venn diagram? Tell me what that is. What's a Venn diagram? Yes. Yes. Okay. So here's two circles, and as they move closer and closer and closer, there's a little bit of place where they overlap, and then there's place where they don't overlap. So that's the compare, where they overlap, and contrast, where they don't overlap. That's a Venn diagram. And you can have two, you can have three, you can have so many. There's some similarities between all things, and there's some differences between all things. We're all spirit soul, that's the similarity. We have a relationship with Krishna, that's a similarity. We're influenced by the modes in a different way, that's a dissimilarity. There's a similarity that we're, you get the idea. We're influenced by the modes, but which modes? That's dissimilar. And therefore our prescribed duties are different. And there's some prescribed duties that are the same. Rise early and take a bath. That's similar. And then what we do the rest of the day is dissimilar, but we have prescribed duties. So, similar, dissimilar. He's doing that with time. Compare and contrast. There's the influence of time on the temporary, and then there's the influence of time, which is conspicuous by its absence in pure devotional service. Okay? That's what we're hearing in principle. And I'd like to go back. So the spotlight is on time. Fascinating, fascinating, very, very deep and profound subject. Time. Because it exists in this world, and it's conspicuous by its absence in the spiritual world, but there's eternal time. So time as we know it is conspicuous by its absence, but time as we know it comes from time that's eternal. Otherwise it doesn't exist. Nothing exists without a prior existence in the realm of the eternal. Very deep and profound, especially with time. So I'm going to go back to where in this chapter Kapiladeva introduces the topic of time after he explains how to get to the stage of unmixed devotional service where the modes of nature just don't operate anymore. The modes of nature, those of you that are familiar with Bhagavad Gita know, there's five topics, according to Baladeva Vidyabhusan, in Bhagavad Gita. Four of them eternal, one of them is temporary. Correct? One that's temporary is karma. And of the things that are eternal, time is one of them. And the soul is one, living entity is one. What's number five? Prakriti, material nature. Material nature is sometimes manifest, sometimes not manifest, but it's eternal. And time is eternal. And the living entity and God are eternal. And karma is temporary. So we're in, just like yesterday evening's class on karma yoga. How do you manage the temporary? Well, you offer to Krishna. Karma yoga. And the complete form of that is bhakti. Everything is for Krishna. That's pure devotional service. Unmixed by kala, time. Unmixed by karma. Unmixed by guna. Unmixed. Still you're involved with it. It's profound. While involved with it, you're not influenced by it. That requires transcendental consciousness. You have to be connected to Krishna in devotion to Krishna. Otherwise, notionally it's nice, but you won't experience it. And then you scratch your head and say, you know, why is my chanting mechanical? And all of those things that we always talk about and hear others ask about. We're getting a map. Better than a GPS. It's a pure Supreme Personality of Godhead giving us the guidance how to get to the destination we want to get to. You just put in, you know, back to Godhead as your destination. It gives you the, you know, how to get there. And it keeps reminding you when you forget. Just stay absorbed in the message of Bhagavatam. Instead of this lady that says, I told you to turn left. You didn't turn left. Recalculating. So instead of that kind of message, it's, you know, a very patient voice of the pure devotee of the Lord and the Lord and giving us this message again and again. So let's hear about time. I'm going to go back to text 35. We're going to get to 45 for this morning. Text 35 is a bit of a summary verse of the prior discussion. My dear mother, O daughter of Manu, a devotee who applies the science of devotional service and mystic yoga in this way can achieve the abode of the Supreme Person simply by that devotional service. Text 36. This Purusha, whom the individual soul must approach, is the eternal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Brahman and Paramatma. He is the transcendental chief personality, and his activities are all spiritual. Without specifically mentioning, he's gone into Bhagavan. It's another very important message from the initial verses of the Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2. The verse that says, the Advaya Gyan, feature of the Absolute Person, the Absolute Truth has three features. Vedanta tattva vidas, tattvam yajnanam advayam, jnanam advayam or advaya jnan. The transcendence has the different features, Brahman Paramatma Bhagavan. He says, it's a very important verse. Another class will discuss that. Very important verse, and here it is. It's kind of an echo. Hello, 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 hello. So it's an echoing that verse. Devotional service can make one fully acquainted with Brahman Paramatma and Bhagavan and the fully transcendental activities of Bhagavan. Because the activities of Paramatma are, we'll use this word, a suppressed version or not complete version of the activities of Bhagavan. Because Paramatma has activities, he doesn't perform rasa dance and lift Govardhan Hill, but he upadrashta and anumanta. He sees and he permits. He's guiding the activities of the living entity. He's maya dyakshena prakriti. Adyaksha. He's overseeing prakriti. Prakriti doesn't move without the sanction of Paramatma. So he has activities, but not exactly lila. He has activities involving overseeing the affairs of time and prakriti and the modes of nature. You know, the whole affairs of the cosmic manifestation. That's the purusha. Through the medium, the verse is saying, 36, saying through the medium of devotional service, one can understand all those things. Not everything, but you can understand essential messages. The tiny cannot know the unlimited. But to some degree, we can understand the unlimited by disclosure of the unlimited through the medium of bhakti. So that section. Now this section starts with verse 37 and it goes to 45 and it ends the chapter. So verse 37 introduces the topic of time. Kala. The time factor who causes the transformation of the various material manifestations is another feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's already mentioned Brahman and Paramatma. He's alluded to Bhagavan. Now here's another feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyone who does not know that time is the same Supreme Personality is afraid of the time factor. That's kind of like an introduction, and you're going to hear repetition. Fear and fear and fear and fear and fear and fear and fear. You're going to hear it a whole bunch of times. Similar, we find this in purport of Bhagavad Gita. The wind blows out of fear of the Supreme Lord. Yeah. So. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the enjoyer of all sacrifices. Bhoktaram Jagatapasam. He's the enjoyer of, he's the bhokta of all yajnas. We were discussing chapter 3 yesterday evening, the principle of sacrifice. Verse number 10. By this means of sacrifice, yajna, there's a bhokta of the yajna, that's Lord Vishnu, all desirable things are achieved. There's harmony between jiva, prakriti, and Ishvara. And then it's proper karma, so that, you know, that there's harmony and peace within creation if one abides by this principle of yajna. So Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the enjoyer of all sacrifices, is the time factor and the master of all masters. That's going to be expanded. He enters everyone's heart. He is the support of everyone. And he causes every being to be annihilated by another. Someone may think he's annihilating others or being annihilated by others. One of the things I really don't like about international travel is they have all this media, people watching movies, and 9 times out of 10, it's just violence. It's really awful. Really, like, they call it action movies. Violence. You know, this one's doing to that one, but Bhagavatam is teaching it's the time energy. He causes every being to be annihilated by another. No Krishna consciousness in those action movies. Text 39. No one is dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor is anyone his enemy or friend. But he gives inspiration to those who have not forgotten him and destroys those who have. Again, Bhagavad Gita. Samaham sarva bhuteshu na me dvesho sti na priyaha. This is the Supreme Personality, or an incarnation of him, Kapila speaking. Time energy acts this way, time energy acts that way. This is the compare and contrast, the Venn diagram thing. For those that are destroyed because of their forgetfulness of the personality of Godhead, they have fear. So now we're going to hear the fear. 3 verses in a row. Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the wind blows. Out of fear of him, the sun shines. Out of fear of him, the rain pours forth showers. Out of fear of him, the host of heavenly bodies shed their luster. Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the trees, creepers, herbs, and seasonal plants and flowers blossom and fructify, each in its own season. Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the rivers flow, and the ocean never overflows, almost never. Tsunami is there some exception. Out of fear of him, only does fire burn, and does the earth with its mountains not sink in the water of the universe. What's that a list of? The prompt was, those that don't know the personality of Godhead, so these are elements, but behind the elements there's persons, those that do not know, there's devas that control these things. So the devas don't know the personality, even their devotees, they don't know the personality of Godhead fully, and so they do what they do. The word is out of fear. Out of fear, because you lose something and you're fearful that you'll lose it. You can be foolish and not be fearful that you lose it and then lose it and then lament. But even if so, whatever you don't have, you know, the hankering and lamenting and fearful in between. You hanker for what you don't have, you're fearful you'll lose of what you'll have, and when you lose it, and anxiety. Not a nice place being attached to the temporary. Subject to the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the sky allows outer space to accommodate all the various planets, which hold innumerable living entities. The total universal body expands with its 7 coverings under his supreme control. That was 43. You just have 2 verses remaining. 44. Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that directing demigods in charge of the modes of material nature carry out the functions of creation, maintenance, and destruction. Everything animate and inanimate within this material world is under their control. interesting because one of those three is Vishnu, in charge of the modes of nature, and it's mentioned directly in the purport. And then there's, you know, sub-devas that are in charge of different affairs of the universe. Demigods are undoubtedly controlling all matter, animate and inanimate, within this universe, but above them, the supreme controller is the personality of Godhead, Ishwara Parama Krishna. It's very Krishna conscious, because it's coming from the Supreme Lord. Now, the last paragraph speaks of the two kinds of dissolutions. There's sometimes mentioned three. Once at the end of the day of Brahma, once at the end of the life of Brahma. Partial dissolution, complete dissolution. There's a third, sometimes mentioned, is made of this at the during the change of Manus. In part, there's because of the change of Manus, with each new Manu, there's 14 in every day of Brahma, there's a whole new set of demigods. The posts are there, but then they're populated by different persons. The things just get wiped out and start over again. Again and again, bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. And all this is being moved by time. And time is fascinating. Time is, on one hand, the Supreme Person. On the other hand, it's an energy of the Supreme Person. But it is directly His energy. It's not one of His external energies. It's directly His energy. Time is in its category. It's one of the five topics. It's in a category of its own, the separate tattva. Just like Srimati Radharani, she's His internal potency. And Radharani expands into various goddesses of fortune, and those goddesses of fortune expand themselves just like Rama Devi, the internal potency of Mahavishnu. She has an expansion. And that expansion is Chaya Devi, the shadow of Rama Devi. Chaya means shadow. That shadow doesn't have any separate existence apart from that which the shadow comes from. Chaya Devi is an expansion of Rama Devi. And it's that Chaya Devi that the glance of Mahavishnu contacts and creation begins. So different and non-different. We can emphasize the non-difference, and we can emphasize the difference, the compare and contrast. But Maya Devi or Chaya Devi or Durga Devi, ultimately she acts according to the will of the Supreme Lord. She's the consort of Lord Shiva, but she acts according to the indication of the Supreme Lord. They both act according to the indication of the Supreme Lord. Different and non-different at the same time. So here's the final verse of the chapter and purport. The eternal time factor has no beginning and no end. Now we're in the different part. You know, the time that's conspicuous by its absence. In that destination for the living entities that was spoken of in verse 35. The spiritual world, the abode of the Supreme Lord, where time is conspicuous by its absence. The eternal time factor has no beginning and no end. It is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, if you remember previously, time and the personality of Godhead are non-different. Here is speaking of time as a representative of. It is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, comma, the maker of the criminal world. Whoa. That's this place, by the way, the criminal world. We're in jail because our criminal mentality. Yes, our criminal mentality. It, the pronoun it refers to the eternal time factor, brings about the end of the phenomenal world. It carries on the work of creation by bringing one individual into existence from another, and likewise it dissolves the universe by destroying even the Lord of Death, Yamaraj. What a nice conclusion. He who is the Lord of Death dies, because his capacity to bring about anything comes from one who is eternal, and even the post of Yamaraj, or the person occupying the post of Yamaraj, is not eternal. His powers are not eternal, his position is not eternal. Out of all that seems so powerful in this world, nothing is eternal. Hiranyakashipu is not, you know, eternal. Purport. Short purport. By the influence of eternal time, which is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Father begets a Son, and the Father dies by the influence of cruel death. But by time's influence, even the Lord of cruel death is killed. In other words, all the demigods within the material world are temporary, like ourselves. Our lives last for 100 years at the most, and similarly, although their lives may last for millions and billions of years, the demigods are not eternal. No one can live within this material world eternally. The phenomenal world is created, maintained, and destroyed by the finger signal of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What a nice poetic way. He doesn't even have to do that. Finger signal. He just has to desire. Doesn't even have to lift his finger. Therefore, conclusion. A devotee does not desire anything in this material world. That's a pure devotee. A devotee desires only to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This servitude exists eternally. Semicolon. The Lord exists eternally, his servitor exists eternally, and the service exists eternally. So the conclusion, therefore, is inviting us to focus on our destination, being with Krishna, while we're dealing with that which is temporary. We have contact with that which is temporary for a very specific reason. We desire to enjoy it independently of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, here we are. He sanctioned that. He didn't want that, but, you know, we wanted that, and he didn't interfere with our want and created the situation. All the while giving impetus to being in our eternal relation. So that's the connection between this and the next section. Impetus to be engaged in the eternal. Even while within the realm of the temporary. Knowledge alone is not sufficient. Knowledge is necessary, but we all know that knowledge alone is not sufficient, including knowing that knowledge is not sufficient is not sufficient. Bhakti is necessary, because bhakti can carry us beyond the temporary. Knowledge can give us indication of what's beyond the temporary. A nice example is, you know, the windows. Then there's the wall. We know on the other side of the wall there's something. And we look through the window, we can see what that something is. But we're not on the other side of the window. We just get an indication of what's on the other side of the window. But knowledge is like a window into transcendence. Transcendental knowledge is powerful. It can detach. It has the power of detachment. It can detach one from the temporary. But it doesn't. You can't get on the other side of that window unless you go on the other side of the window. That's bhakti. It carries one into the realm of transcendental life. So even while we're on this side of the wall and this side of the window, we can be engaged in eternal activity, even while engaging in the temporary. It's mystical. It sounds a little bit like double talk, but it's mystical. Because, as stated here, I'll just read it again, the concluding sentence. A devotee desires only to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This servitude exists eternally. Means it's of the soul. The awakening of that which is eternal, it's in a seed-like state in the conditioned soul's heart, but it's there, like within the covering of a seed is life. It's not manifest. It's dormant. This servitude exists eternally. And even within this realm of time, past, present, and future time, and all other things that are under time's influence that are also temporary, that eternal servitude can become awakened through bhakti, through association with bhaktas who are carrying bhakti. Really wonderful. Here's a bunch of coals. There was a fire and the fire went out. There's now some coals. Coals, they're glowing red, but there's no flame coming from them. So we take the coals and put the coals together, really close together, and just some movement of air. What happens? The flame comes out again. That's Sadhu Sangha. It's called Hare Krishna Temple. And the hearing and chanting. What we're doing right now. That's this. And then coming together. So that the servitude that's eternally existing comes out. The Lord exists eternally, His servitor exists eternally, and the service exists eternally. It exists eternally, although it's dormant. At least the manifest form of servitude is dormant. So it's misplaced. We're then serving something temporary. And you name it, that's what we're doing. We have so many varieties of temporary. Each one of us, varieties of temporary. So if you're a Mayavadi, you're told, just throw it away. Call this world false. Take sannyas. And don't do anything. Just study Vedanta Sutra and chant Om. And Bhakti just says, no. These are energies of the Supreme Lord. the means of purification is to engage that energy of the Supreme Lord in service to the Supreme Lord. That's the means of purification, under proper guidance, because there's a connection of all those things with the source. Keep your mind fixed on the source. Well, the problem is, we don't keep our mind fixed on the source. Even when we're chanting Hare Krishna, our mind is all over the place, not on the holy name. What to speak of when we're doing our prescribed duties and calling it devotional service. So, my dear devotees, we need to be very clear what devotional service is and what devotional service isn't. In the beginning stage, there's, therefore, you're studying nectar devotion, then there's sadhana bhakti. Those first 19, a good part of the 19 chapters, it's sadhana bhakti, how to do that. You follow that faithfully. And you do that faithfully, under guidance and proper association, and avoid offenses and things like that. Then purification can take place, and the awakening of bhakti can take place. The coverings of the soul can be diminished by that practice. And then the spontaneous devotional service and the ripened fruit of love of God. It's so what's the problem? One of Prabhupada's personal servants, Shruti Kirti, wrote a book. That's the title of the book. What's the problem? Because Prabhupada would use that. The problem is we're attached. We're attached to being enjoyers of the temporary, even we're taking up devotional service. You know, to a greater degree or to a lesser degree. You know, comparing one individual to another, or even comparing ourselves to, you know, one moment and the next moment, to a greater degree, to a lesser degree. And there's a wonderful verse, I'll end with this. There's a wonderful verse by Rupa Goswami that teaches what the Vaishnava conception of detachment is. And that is, according to suitability, we may accept those things which are temporary and engage them in service to Krishna. According to suitability. That leaves lots of wiggle room, according to suitability. Anasaktasya Vishayan is the first phrase. Without attachment. Anasaktasya. Asakti means attachment. Anasaktasya means without attachment. Vishayan means sense enjoyment. Senses, contacting objects for enjoyment. No. Anasaktasya vishayan. Yatarham upayunjitaha. Yartaham is this curious word. According to suitability. So what's suitable for this one may not be suitable for that one, may not be suitable for another one. And then even just take the other one. In this circumstance it may be suitable, in that circumstance it may not be suitable. Then there's things we just don't move on. It's just not suitable, period, to do certain things. Even one may have an inclination to do that thing. Four regular principles, for example. Just not suitable. Starting a fire and pour water on the fire, not suitable. According to suitability, one may live this way, one may live that way. There's four ashrams, and there's different differences within each of those four ashrams, according to suitability. But according to suitability, the principle that pervades is anasaktasya vishayan. If you're going to have a computer, for example, it's conducive for your service to Krishna, and it matches your propensity or whatever, don't use it for sense gratification. There are easy ways to use computers for sense gratification. I mean, even like disgusting sense gratification. Just this little object. There are people that have marketed all kinds of disgusting ways to degrade your consciousness through computer use. Adults and children alike. Styled for both. Called marketing. You can destroy your life. You can spoil your life by accepting something that's not properly utilized in Krishna service. So there's risk. You accept something. There's risk if you don't accept something. If it's suitable to you to have something. So that's the conscience or the submission to guidance, whether it's super soul or representative of super soul, being submissive to guidance. And then acting appropriately, even in the sadhana stage. So what we're going to hear next, starting tomorrow morning, is what happens if you don't hear and heed that warning? You're going to engage in fruitive activity. So the anatomy of fruitive activity is the next chapter, and it's scary. There's consequences that are scary. For, you know, those that are criminals, they may, after they do their jail, they do something criminal, they do some jail time, they go out again. They may be more careful next time because propensity remains to do that criminal thing again, steal or whatever it is. But, you know, the caution is don't steal again because being in jail is not nice. How many times are there repeat offenders and they're in jail again? Like that for us, this next chapter is adverse fruit of activities. Heed the message because it's nice. And not heeding the message is not nice. One thing we all share, we don't like to suffer. We like to be happy, we don't want to suffer. And there's consequences if you don't heed the position of happiness. But the positive is, be in this realm of timelessness, the eternal servitude spirit that's within the soul. That's real happiness and real peace. That's the 529 Bhagavad Gita. I'll just end with this. Who knows the verse? 529 Bhoktaram Jagatapasam. Who can say the verse? Do any of the children know the verse? Go ahead. Microphone. You like being on a microphone. Meaning? There's three things. Bhoktaram Jagatapasam means? He's the bhokta of all yajnas. He's the beneficiary of all yajnas. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. He's the control of the entire universe. Maha Ishwara. And then? Suradam. Suhrid, dear most friend, of who? Sarvabhutanam, all living entities. Now the last line, Gyatvamam, thus knowing, Shantim, Richati. One can be peaceful. Would you like to be peaceful or would you like to be disturbed? Well, I'd like to be peaceful, but I'd also like to enjoy independently. So you'll be disturbed. You'll be disturbed. If you want to be peaceful, follow that formula. Peace formula, Prabhupada calls it. Same as here. And then the next chapter is the unpeaceful formula. Don't heed the message. You're opening the door for disturbance. And disturbances come rushing in. Leave the door open. Not like maybe, maybe not. guaranteed. Disturbances come rushing in. And we're paying the price for our previous misuse of free will. That's, you know, as practicing devotees, sadhakas, we get our share of unwanted disturbances. And including those disturbances that come from the time energy. Just things come into being and things go out of being. And then we hanker and we lament. Because it's that enjoying independently from Krishna problem. We can't blame someone else. It's as our own. We purchase problems. I was waiting for that second really loud scream. First one is a whimper and the second one is a wail. Okay. Any comments or questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. In text number 38, it says, He is the support of everyone and He causes every being to be annihilated by another. It's a little difficult for me to comprehend where on one side it's said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is supporting everyone, whereas in the next sentence it says He causes the destruction of everyone.
Why is it a problem? He's the source of everything, so that includes the maintenance and destruction and the creation. He's the source of it all. Nothing can be destroyed. Nothing can come into being. Nothing can be maintained without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So He's the support, the maintainer. He's the creator and ultimately the creator and the destroyer. He's the source of everything. What's the contradiction?
Simultaneously creating and destroying.
Yeah. Time is everywhere, ubiquitous. In the maintenance feature, time is there. In the creation feature, time is there. In the destruction feature, time is there. There's different phases of time.
So here, when he says he causes everything, every being to be annihilated by another, is it just the food chain or?
No, everything. Everything. You know, like these action movies, somebody's holding a gun, they shoot the gun. Or, you know, just not just action movies. You know, in real life, somebody comes and shoots people. He's thinking, I'm the doer, I'm powerful, I can shoot people. That his ability to shoot people comes from the Supreme. Or whatever it is, a little microbial germ that causes someone's death. A little mosquito that comes and bites you with, you know, whatever it is this latest thing is. He's the instrument of time. Behind that little mosquito is time.
One more question.
Okay.
In text 39 it says, He gives inspiration to those but who have not forgotten to those who have not forgotten Him.
Yes.
And destroys those who have. Could you explain that more?
Sure. There's two parts, the inspiration of the devotee and the destruction of those that are not. So for the devotee, because they're harmonious with Krishna. They wish to become, and they have become harmonious with Krishna. So they have realizations or inspirations on what is Krishna's interest, what is Krishna's will, what is pleasing to Krishna, and they, with those inspirations, they do that. Now that devotee, they'll also have to give up their body. So in that sense, they're also destroyed. But for the devotee, this is Canto 2, time acts differently for the non-devotee and the devotee. Bodies are annihilated for both, but the passing of time every moment for the devotee, you're closer to Krishna's eternal abode with passing of every moment. And with the non-devotee, so that's the other part, with the non-devotee, their hopes with every passing moment is being crushed. Their whatever it is that they have with every passing moment is being taken away. Although they're thinking, I'm accumulating more, it's being taken away because they're that much closer to everything being taken from them, whether it's suddenly or gradually. Time is destroying everything. No, so their bodies will die, the devotees' bodies will die. So that's not speaking of that kind of destruction. You know, the sand castle of happiness as the tide comes in is being destroyed as the tide comes in, even before the tide comes and wipes out the sand castle.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Next.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I teach the younger kids downstairs during Sunday, and we've been having very interesting discussions last couple of weeks. There's one root question I'm having difficulty answering to the kids. Is their question is, yes, we understand we surrender to Krishna, Krishna protects us.
We understand which, the first part?
We surrender to Krishna,
surrender
and Krishna protects
and
us.
Krishna protects us. So,
but the difficulty there, at least, you know, I'm having to explain to them is, it's conditional. Meaning, they feel that at one point, you know, and we go deeper into the discussion that Krishna is a dictator, they feel that if you do not do what I say, you're going to suffer.
Everything is? What was the last word?
If
you don't do what Krishna says,
what Krishna
everything
says,
is?
We have to suffer.
So they have to suffer.
Yeah, they feel it's a dictatorship, meaning if you do not surrender to it.
Okay, put the microphone down. The fact that Krishna is controller doesn't therefore conclude that Krishna is a dictator. The logic is fallacious. Controller doesn't equal dictator. Just in principle. There's benevolent controllers and there's cruel controllers. And commonly the word dictator infers the latter. He's not a dictator. Let's take, for example, let's take Putana and her two brothers. They came to kill Krishna, and Krishna gave them liberation. Different kinds of liberation. A devotee can understand that. A non-devotee can't understand that. He says, well, Krishna killed them. But a devotee can understand Krishna gave them, in the case of Putana, Krishna gave her the position of an eternal assistant of Mother Jasoda in Goloka Vrindavan. Now we'll go back to the question. It's not that from Krishna's side, if you don't do what I want you to do, you're going to get smacked. That's, you know, apparent, maybe looked upon by a child, that if you, what kind of parent are you? What kind of loving parent are you? If I don't do what you want, you're going to smack me. No, a benevolent parent isn't interested in causing suffering for their child. The child is looking at happiness means I want to enjoy on my terms, and you interfere with happiness on my terms, and you're causing me suffering. And the benevolent parent is thinking, I'm not causing you suffering. I'm relieving you from unnecessary suffering. I could just be, you know, a hands-off parent, and I just don't say anything about anything, and you do whatever you want to do. And that's not a benevolent parent. I may restrict you from some of the things that you think is going to bring happiness. And that's not a tyrant or dictator. It's a loving parent. And today, you may not understand by restricting you from such and such. It's not tyranny. It's loving. And there may be some times when there's some things that you want to do that I don't think they're so wholesome. I'll let you do them anyway. Because there's give and take. And it's not as harmful as this other thing that I definitely put my foot down. But it's not dictatorship. It's a loving relationship. Krishna does that. Krishna gives us all kinds of things to do. But he's indicating our ultimate happiness. And the reality is, there's an ultimate happiness. And I'll just end with this. A problem. When Prabhupada published Fifth Canto, there was lots of discussion about the subject matter in the Fifth Canto by experienced devotees that had faith in Krishna, and back and forth and back and forth directly, just in conversations with Prabhupada. He was traveling in America and in Canada. He was traveling across Canada, and their devotees were traveling with him, you know, Fifth Canto Katha. And finally, one of the things that Prabhupada concluded was, the reason that we struggle with this, the question that's being asked by the person that you're having a, you know, hard time responding to, is they want to equate themselves with Krishna. It's the root problem of material existence, is we want to be Krishna. And the companion of that raga is dvesha. We don't like the fact that there's somebody that's in that position. The benevolent source of everything, especially when they don't meet our demands of independent enjoyment. We want to be independent enjoyers. That's the root of the problem. It's the cause of our material existence, and it's the cause why the person, whoever this person is, or persons that have this type of question and are never satisfied no matter what you say, it's that attitude towards Krishna problem. He is the controller. And he is benevolent. He is not a dictator. He wants our best interest. We don't know what our best interest is. And sometimes there's enjoyment when really we deserve suffering. But when that suffering comes, or the enjoyment comes, it's not a dictator type spirit. Way in the back, there's a hand up way in the corner.
Yes, the way the discussions were going on, and this lasted for at least 5 weeks of discussion.
Okay.
And it actually, last week, one of the kids, you know, spontaneously said, yes, I think that is what it is, where Krishna is himself and we cannot become Krishna. I think that is where everything lies.
Yes, that's the root.
Yes. And I think now they have to, it's their own consciousness that will has to unfold by saying that I have to surrender, accept this and surrender like this. Yeah.
And it's a relationship of love. Ultimately, mm-hmm. if turn it the other way around, if we were Krishna, we're not. If we were Krishna, where's the relationship of love? Because the relationship of love is with Krishna. It's a loveless life.
Yes, Maharaj. Yeah.
And the position of loving life is reality. Krishna is Krishna, and we're part and parcel of Krishna, and he's not. Our happiness is his happiness, and his happiness is our happiness, and that's the reality. And if I don't want to accept that, then I'm stuck with the misery and, you know, the delusions of grandeur that I'm the supreme, when it ain't so. However, what one may protest, I don't like it, he's a dictator. You want to be the dictator. That's the problem. No, question in the corner. All the way back.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I have two questions. First one is in verse number 43. It says there are seven layers covering this supreme control, expands within seven coverings under his supreme control. In the purport, Prabhupada is giving only five. What are the other two, Maharaj?
This is just a factual information question. Yes?
Yes, Maharaj. Just I'm curious, what are the other two?
I have to look, see what the five gives. Earth, water, fire. It only gives three. Earth, water, fire. A very precise answer you'll find in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. From my reading, different references say different things as far as what the seven are, but a very definitive description is found in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, where Gopa Kumara is passing through those layers. And I have to get my computer out to tell you what Brihat Bhagavatamrita says, but that's a reference place you can go to get definitive answer. So obviously it's the Panchabhuta. It makes it very clear in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. It's not like earth as we know it is the first layer. You know, like, you know, rocks and soil and not like that. It's the prototype of this. He passes through it. It's not like it's darkness. And then, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the five, 6, 7. I can't remember to be, you know, I'm reluctant to say something from a position of weak memory. Specifically, you know, the sixth is something subtle, but it's my memory says number seven is something like Mahatattva or something like that.
I was referring to Bhagavad Gita. It says eight Ashta Prakriti Bhinna Prakriti.
Yeah,
eight. So
that's there's eight elements, but there's seven coverings. Doesn't have to be a one-to-one match. There's eight elements and there's seven coverings, and that's why I'm hesitating, because element number seven, somewhere rattling around in my poor memory, is it's not one of those eight. It's something like Mahatattva, or like, you know, a big warehouse kind of a picture. I tell you what, if you come for class tomorrow morning, between now and tomorrow morning, I'll look it up and we'll share that particular piece of information.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. Maharaj, another question is, this is in general, verse number 40, I'm specifically referring about fear. All the knowledge we hear is from these great demigods, like, you know, Brahma, either sun god, Vivaswan, Manve Praha, that's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. So these are all definitely elevated than people like me, any devotee. And we worship them, they are in line of parampara. How come they're very fearful of Supreme Lord having this knowledge and applying in their lives? Why can't they have love towards Lord? Why they have to come with fear? Because the same thing, like, you know, sun comes, shines with the fear of Lord. In Islam also said the same thing, you know, sun comes from the beneath the Lord's chair, like that. Why it has to be fear? Why can't it be a love? Because they have this knowledge, and we are getting that knowledge from them only.
I got the question. You can keep saying the question. I got the question.
It's boggling my mind, you know.
Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Take the microphone from him. This is the distinction between Braja Prem and the quality and quantity of love of those who are devotees that are not of that exalted nature. There's love. But it's not, you know, it's love that's mixed. Let's just go to Brahma and the Brahma Vimohan Leela. You with me? Okay. When Brahma makes his little mistake, I mean, more than a little mistake, those who are very dear to Krishna, Krishna's enjoying having his transcendental Leela with the cows, Govinda having transcendental Leela with the cows and the cowherd boys, and Brahma comes and steals them. It's a big offense. When Brahma comes back, the prayers that he offers, they're wonderful. And you, how does Krishna respond to these wonderful prayers? Nada. Doesn't say anything. Why? He wants to go back with the cowherd boys and have lunch with the cowherd boys. Now, Brahma has love, but not that kind of love. Just different quality of love. And because of a different quality of love, mixed with transcendental knowledge, there's some fear along with that love. And then you go down, and there's more fear and less love. And, you know, there's love, but there's also fear. And then you go keep going down, and there's less love, and there's even animosity. And lots of fear. But, you know, those people that have lots of fear, they may walk with a swagger and say, no fear. It's a bluff. No, they'll go back up again. There's some fear. And it's not that the sun only shines because of fear. It doesn't say that. There's no love, it's only fear. It doesn't say that. It's a compare and contrast kind of thing again. There's love. Read those prayers of Brahma. He has love. He understands who Krishna is a lot better than we understand who Krishna is. He understands he's going to be punished for his misdeed. And he's ready to accept it. Read, you know, 10:14:8. He knows he's going to get a reaction for that misdeed. He's ready to accept it. He just doesn't want to budge an inch from the position of devotional service to Krishna. He doesn't want to forget Krishna for a moment. Even when that difficulty comes. There's love. And there's fear. It's a different quality, that's all. So we're being encouraged to come to that Braja Prem. That's how we're being guided and trained. Okay? Last two questions. Oops, three questions. Whoops, four questions. Okay. It's nine. It's already 8:30. Yeah. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is, in the context of what Mohan Leela Prabhu was talking about, Krishna says, Sukhrudam Sarva Bhudana, and we have all these examples of Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj, you know, from the demoniac race, they are great devotees. But then, there is this verse where Bhagavan says in Bhagavad Gita, I can't remember the verse, I throw them into more and more Asuri birds.
Okay, I know the verse.
Yeah. So, where is that line? And the Lord is no longer your friend at that point. He is throwing you into verse and verse, a demoniac species.
I got the picture. So what's the question?
The question is, there he stops.
Put the microphone in front of your mouth, it will help.
I feel in that verse he's saying, I'm no longer your friend. I mean, Sukhrudam Sarva Bhudanam, that stops at that point, I feel, for that entity, living entity.
Take the microphone. When he does that, it's not out of animosity. He knows there's no devesha from his side. When he does that, it's not part of his character. He's reciprocating. He's doing like that to help them come to the position of being in proper consciousness. It's not to cause misery and pain. He's cruel, and he's a cruel master and harsh, and you don't do what I say, and I'm going to. Not like that. It's done for the purpose of bringing them to the proper position. They're not lost forever. That's your imagination. They're under his jurisdiction, and he wants to bring them to their proper position. That's why he's doing that. But he doesn't interfere with their free will. It's part of his loving quality. Next.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, thank you for the class. The point that you have mentioned in previous Bhagavatam classes also I have heard, this fifth canto and this chapter, when we hear, we can be fixed in, if we want to be more sincere in devotion.
Not more sincere, just more petrified. if you go off the middle of the road and head for the ditch, it's pretty dangerous. That's...
Yes, Maharaj. So when we hear, I see my consciousness being more, sort of, being more serious. How can we go past this? It's okay to start and be serious with this sort of fear, but how can
we?
Well, we all begin.
We have to work with whatever we have to work with. And if we have affinity for matter, and we hear affinity for matter has problems, it'll make us take a step or two, maybe five steps back from the affinity for matter tendency. So we have to work with whatever we have. However, when doing that, don't be forgetful, or always remember that the real sustainable, enduring, prolonging benefit of stepping back from affinity for matter is it provides an opportunity for becoming attached to Krishna. It helps. If you want to make a fire, then you take fuel that's dry rather than fuel that's wet. But then even you have dry fuel, you need to ignite the dry fuel. Bhakti is the igniting, and then the fuel can burn. So similarly, it's bhakti. What we're after is bhakti, not just detachment from affinity for matter and the enjoying spirit. We want to replace that with something else, not just reduce that. We want to replace that with something else. affinity for pleasing Krishna spirit. Okay. Over here. Pass the microphone.
Question from yesterday.
Question from yesterday.
Is it possible to sometimes be in bhakti yoga and sometimes in karma yoga? Like sometimes
it's mixed.
Something's
yes.
Renunciation.
Karma, mishra, bhakti. Yes.
Some of our activities are in bhakti yoga and
yes.
Some activities.
It has to do with consciousness. What's behind the activity is consciousness. So yes. Yes. You have one last question? I want to save the best for last.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, you said that in the five topics of Bhagavad Gita, karma is temporary.
In the five topics, karma is temporary, yes.
So how can we like engage our karma for Krishna?
Your Krishna karma. Study for Krishna. Chant for Krishna. Sing for Krishna. Take your meals for Krishna. And do everything for Krishna. Krishna karma. How's that? Okay. One last. This is literally the last one.
Connected to Prabhu's question, Prabhu. So, if it is Mishrama Bhakti, what happens at that time? What happens to that devotional service? Will it be still?
It depends on the consciousness. Because there, you can be going up, you can be going down, or staying, you know. So, it depends on you. It depends on how you apply yourself to the elevating principles of bhakti. As opposed to, if you read the last verse of chapter 6 in the purport, the position one is in on the yoga ladder depends on what you're attached to. So you can be attached to the karma part of karma mishra bhakti and you won't progress. You can be attached to cultivation of bhakti in the karma mishra bhakti and you'll progress. So what happens to the bhakti depends upon what you're attached to or who you're attached to. Okay?
Yes, Maharaj. Yesterday I understood that whatever the devotional service I do, it may not be pure, but my spiritual master makes it purified. And like
I didn't say that. You understood something very interesting.
I remember the example of one person brings roots,
yes.
Something to offer to Krishna,
yes.
And then the pujari offers it.
Okay.
So although he's not with that pure consciousness, but the pujari is offering it.
And etc. Meaning, you know, the exchanges that person has as they come into the temple, they may hear some topic about devotional service. They may take a book. There's so many variables. Not just the consciousness of the pujari on the altar. There's so many variables that make up what our consciousness, what impacts our consciousness. So that person, like many people, come here to the center. And they're coming from all different backgrounds of where they've been and where they want to go. So our responsibility, your responsibility, not just the pujari's responsibility or the spiritual master's responsibility, it's our responsibility to be emissaries or representatives of Krishna. And according to our position and our ability to convey the message of bhakti, we look for a suitable way to convey it. And sometimes it can just be being friendly. And then the person that came to make some offering and put it on, you know, to the deity, they may think, oh, these people are very nice. Just because you are nice. And then depending upon the person, and then each of our capacities, your capacity and, you know, your daughter's capacity to extend bhakti to others, then it can nourish that person's position and they can say yes, no, or maybe. They can respond differently according to what's presented to them. But our responsibility is to present in an appropriate, suitable to the person kind of a manner, the message of Krishna, or a life of devotion to Krishna.
Okay. Thank you.
So there's many variables in nurturing bhakti in a person's path toward Krishna. We each have some responsibility. Okay, we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.